Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome to this new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. Today, I'm happy that we have Dan McGaw. Dan is the CEO and founder of McGaw.io and is a real MarTech expert. We're happy to have you here. Could you introduce yourself, Dan?
Yeah, thanks for having me as well. It's a real pleasure to be here. So I'm Dan McGaw, I'm the CEO founder of McGaw.io. We're a marketing technology agency that helps a lot of companies with analytics and business intelligence as well. I've been in this space for over 20 years. So I got my start in 1998, since before there was even such a thing as mass email. And I was sending mass emails all the way back then. So the easiest way to kind of summarize my career is I've just seen some shit. I've been around for a long time. Most recently, people recognize me, of course, from when I was the head of marketing at Kissmetrics, one of the pioneers in the analytics space. I was head of marketing there, where I fortunately took over for Neil Patel. Neil Patel, one of the founders of the company, I was recruited in to take his place, which was a super awesome position. And before that, I was the head of growth at a company called CodeSchool.com, which was one of the pioneers in the online education space for developers. So you might be familiar with Team Treehouse, CodeSchool, Code Academy. We were one of the main players in that space. I started with them as their first employee, took them from $50,000 a month to $400,000 a month in revenue in about 12 months, and then helped get them teed up to be acquired by Pluralsight, who is the publicly traded company in that space. Had some awesome successes in my career, but really a lot of those all revolve around marketing and technology. And I've always been able to find a great way to leverage technology to acquire customers. And that's how we wound up starting our consulting company we have today.
Well, that's quite an impressive background you have there, Dan. And especially the names you're mentioning, and I can imagine that it's also, it's an honor to be in the company that Neil Patel founded, but it's also like it could be a little scary, you know, it's when you're succeeding a guy that is not successful. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Neil was a great guy and really, really nice to work with. I mean, I think my first interview with Neil was definitely like, hey, what's this going to be like? But I don't tend to get too intimidated by things like that. Obviously, I have respect for him. I know where he's coming from. And I may not be doing the same things as he is, but I think Neil and I were very much on the same wavelength. We both are experts at very, very different things. So we complemented each other really, really well. I think I was probably more intimidated by the board of directors at the company, just because my first day, basically, I said, Neil, like, what do you want me to do? And he said, it's on you, bud. You got to figure this out. You start reporting to the board in 2 weeks. And I was like, what? And that was expected. But Neil didn't really bother me. Heaton, who is the other co-founder, was a good dude as well. I think it took me a little while to get used to the board of directors, just because you're coming under this huge review. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't too bad. And Neil's a great guy. I have a good relationship with him. I know some people out there think that Neil is potentially a little pushy and a little bit forward with what he's trying to do. But at the end of the day, I have a great relationship with him.
Nice. And then after that, you started your own company, McGaw.io. And I'll put that in the show notes for listeners that don't have the time to write it down right now. But just a couple of practical things. You're based out of Florida, right? So your company is based in Florida?
Yeah, so I'm in Orlando, Florida. There's a few of us that are in Florida, but our team is entirely remote. So we have members of our team all across the country and a few team members all around the world. But all of our clients are based in the United States. So we do all of our work here in the US. I think we have one team member in Canada. We don't have any clients in Canada right now, but we tend to stick only to the US due to time zone restrictions. As like we had mentioned when talking earlier, it's much later in the day for you there, and I haven't even hit lunchtime here, right? So it makes it a lot easier to stay close to home.
Absolutely. The time we're recording this is morning for you and almost evening for me. And that's kind of typical when we record sessions with Americans. On the other hand, you know, Europe is nice in the middle when we have we also have guests from Asia. So it's for them, it's later on the evening. So that's all nice. And it's also something, you know, that I like about the podcast, getting to know people all over the world. Today, we're going to talk about 2021, which is around the corner. You know, the year has been hectic and you guys had the elections over there, we had COVID, etc. So for me, the year has gone extremely fast and it's almost 21 before we know it. So some stuff that I would like to talk about is basically two topics. The personalization, because that's one of the trends that we see over here in Europe. You know, every marketer has some kind of personalization in their marketing plan. So let's start talking about that. And we'll talk later on about the whole MarTech stack for 2021. But first of all, personalization, because personalization, and we have had multiple guests on personalization, also from personalization software vendors, can be an expensive thing to do, right? So the examples that we usually mention include Amazon or Netflix or all the big brands, whereas usually marketers have a smaller budget. Is there a way for marketers to, let's say, personalize on a smaller budget?
Yeah, well, I think there's definitely I think when we think about Amazon and Netflix and companies like that, one is personalization, but really the technology that they're leveraging is what's known as a recommendations engine, right? And mm-hmm. while this is personalization, 99% of marketers out there don't need a recommendation engine, right? Because you're not dealing with this vast library of thousands and thousands, if not millions of SKUs. So I think when we try to break down personalization for what your typical marketer needs is, I don't think that you really need the recommendation engine that potentially Netflix or Amazon would have. Now, don't get me wrong. If you need that stuff, there's some really cool technology out there that will help you do that. But yes, it does definitely get pricey. And a key example of that is a customer data platform orchestration company, which is called BlueShift. BlueShift is really, really good at this. It's a customer data platform that adds orchestration, but it'll absorb all of your SKUs and then enable you to basically provide a recommendation through artificial intelligence, machine learning to get that going. Mm-hmm. However, that tool starts at I think $35,000 a year. You cannot expect to get Amazon-like or even Netflix-like recommendation engines, and you really do have to try to start small. So a natural... Another example of that is if somebody's buying shoes, right? And they just purchased shoes. Well, the natural evolution is maybe they're going to buy socks, right? They're probably not going to buy a shirt. So in your follow-up email, you can very easily just have four different product categories saying, hey, you should buy this sock, that sock, this sock, that sock, because that's going to personalize that shopping experience to an extent, which is going to make it more personal to them. So I think sometimes people get a little bit too far away from or recommendation and personalization. And there's a lot more ways to do personalization than just recommending products, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the ways you can personalize especially are different within B2B, of course, because Amazon and Netflix are B2C companies, of course. So B2B requires or usually requires different personalization. If we're talking about personalization, that could be on all kinds of channels. We're talking about web personalization. What other kind of personalizations do you have experience in?
Oh, great question. So we definitely have the experience in personalizing all kinds of stuff, everything from direct mail that you're going to receive, email, text messages, any type of on retargeting, which is programmatic, on website personalization. So we've covered all that gamut. I think the only personalization that I haven't really gotten into is probably OTT and TV and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I definitely know that the technology out there does exist, but that's just not an area that we invest a lot of our time in. But I will say personalization, right? If anybody listening to this podcast goes and looks at Google Trends over the last 5 years, and especially right now, in the beginning of December, personalization will be one of the hottest things searched. And it's always personalization at the end of the year. What personalization is going to be next year? So this is a huge topic at this time of year.
So when we're talking about personalization and personalization within web experiences like the website, one of the other personalization methodologies would be personalized chat or chatbots. Do you have experience in conversational and personalization within that spectrum?
Yeah, I would definitely say that my team does. I'd be the one on our team that doesn't have the most experience with it. I think conversational bots came out more after I got out of the weeds of running all the tools. So I wouldn't be the best person to speak about all of it. But I mean, for me, personalization is very synonymous across no matter what medium it is. It's about really delivering a magical experience to this customer so they're impressed by it and being able to deliver them something of value, right? So I think that's kind of like at the core of it. So I think the similarities between what you might be doing, whether that's text messaging bot, which I do have more experience with, mm-hmm. compared to on-site bots, I think they're all very synonymous.
Absolutely. So one of the things that always comes up when I talk to marketers, either B2B or B2C, is the way AI, artificial intelligence, is incorporated into those solutions. If you look on the websites of all these personalization software vendors, they all have AI. But my experience, you know, with that AI is that it's pretty much at the beginning of all kinds of stuff that need to be developed. How is your experience with AI and personalization?
And this, it's a great question. I mean, I think with AI and even machine learning, right, like relatively similar kind of ways to think mm-hmm. about the world, I think the two terms get confused. This is really where those recommendation engines that I had talked about are really valuable. To make those recommendation engines really, really valuable, which is ultimately what a AI technology is trying to do, is make a recommendation based upon the facts that it has. It takes a lot of data. And it takes a lot of behavior data. It takes a lot of interaction data to kind of build these cohorts and get this stuff going. So I definitely think that we are definitely in the very, very beginning stages of it. But a lot of companies are just saying AI because, like, oh, it's cool. When really there's just this stupid algorithm in the back, right? That's just doing trial by error and trying to figure out what it's going to do right. And then if it sees a positive result, it's going to move in that direction. So it's very, very junior, unless you're working with large sets of data where AI actually has data to work with. And most companies just don't have that data.
Absolutely. So I have the same experience there, but the way it's being sold online on the websites of the software vendors is that it's, you know, almost plug and play, and you know the solution will start personalizing the minute you turn it on. My experience would be that it's same like what you're doing in lead nurturing flows within marketing automation. You have to think out those flows, lead funnels, etc., very carefully, and that's basically the same what you're doing with personalization. Looking at, let's say, personalization and all the tech, the MarTech stack that you need in 2021. Do you see any big differences coming up? Because, you know, we all as marketers and MarTech enthusiasts know about Scott Brinker's landscape, etc. Probably a couple of thousand new logos will be added next year, or some might be consolidated. But, you know, there's probably going to come out some new stuff. What kind of trends do you see for 2021?
Yeah, good question. And Scott's a great guy. Definitely follow his work. Talk to Scott every once in a while. So I think the big difference that's changing is that it's no longer about MarTech, right? It's now about marketing infrastructure. And I think that's the big thing that's going to see a huge turn, is that as we start moving into 2021 and companies, now everybody's using MarTech, right? Especially after COVID, everybody has all these tools. But the problem is no longer, oh, I have to choose a CRM, or I have to choose an automation tool, or what are these different categories I might put all these products in. That problem was kind of solved over the last 5 years with the way that they worked on the stuff. I think the big difference is now is that the integration of these tools is really what's most valuable. And it's no longer about MarTech, and it's more about marketing infrastructure. What is the infrastructure I'm using to really be able to connect all these different data silos? And I think we're kind of coming over that chasm right now to kind of see how that works. And I think the big thing that you probably started seeing really in the last 12 months, last 18 months, is there's been these companies which have kind of popped up to help you integrate tools, whether that be things like Task.io, Workato, Zapier is even getting even bigger than they were. There's a lot of these piping tools which are just making it so I can get data from A to B. And it's more of a no code, low code, or you could also call them citizen coder products that make it easier for all of these things to move around. And I think in 2021, you're going to see a giant explosion of tools around that. Because if you think back over the past 5 years, really customer data platforms became really big, really popular. They kind of helped this connectivity, but they've tried to make it so that I have one record of truth for all of my data. Most companies aren't going to be able to move to a CDP very quickly. So the new thing is everything is going to be focused around what is my infrastructure? How am I managing my architecture and marketing and sales and customer success? And I think what's going to happen is over the next 3 years, instead of it just being marketing infrastructure, it's going to become like, what is my total customer data infrastructure? How do I manage all of my customer data everywhere and get it back to a place that I can use it? And this is a huge reason why our company has doubled down on our abilities in business intelligence, data warehousing, customer data infrastructure, becoming much, much more technical, because that's really where everything's going to wind up going. The tools are kind of like, okay, we have them all now, right? Now we've got to start focusing on how do we connect those tools.
Yeah, and I'm fully with you there, because that's something we see happening. And at Marketing Guys, we get questions like that every day. And, you know, everyone, as you said, has their, let's say, tools and software solutions in place. And but they're all like separate silos that need to be connected. So and 2021 is absolutely going to be the year in which we're going to integrate that stuff. And we've already started. The early adopters already have that. And as you said, CDPs are not basically a solution for everyone. It could be either based on price or the technical solution might be too difficult or whatsoever. But another thing you said there is,
So one of the things which I think is really interesting is, like, we started the conversation out with personalization, right? Mm-hmm. And we talk a little bit about, like, what is 2021 going to be about with the infrastructure and connecting all these tools. Really, the reason why companies want to connect all these tools together is to be able to provide personalization, right? And they are finally starting to cross. I mean, I don't want to say everybody, but many companies are finally crossing this hump and, like, getting over the fact of, wait a second, you mean to tell me that marketing has data, sales has data, customer success has data, product has data, finance has data, HR has data. All of these different departments have customer data. Wait a second. Now, if I want to provide great experiences, I need to get all that customer data to one place so I can create personalization, create those great experiences. Now they have to figure out that infrastructure. So I think those two things are heavily attached together. And it's something I talk a lot about in my book. So I wrote a book last year called, or actually this year, called Build Cool Shit. It's the blueprint for how you'll create your marketing stack. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing about it is, how do you integrate all these tools together to make it so instead of it's about the tools, your business becomes the platform. And you can now leverage all this customer data to do cool things like lead nurturing, lead scoring, being able to provide progressive profiling, being able to use all that stuff so you can create personalization. Whether it's on your chatbot, whether it's over text, whether it's over an automated dialer, whether it's over email, it doesn't matter, right? If you really take the time to build that infrastructure, you can create this amazing personalization.
Absolutely. And I'll put a link to your book in the show notes so listeners can know where to find it on Amazon or on your website. You mentioned that, and that strikes my attention here, is the sales department also has a lot of data. We've always seen that there is a marketing and sales silo or a marketing and sales department within organizations. Marketing, usually the way we would define it within the inbound marketing strategy or methodology, marketing would create marketing qualified leads or MQLs. Those would turn into SQLs and then SAL, sales accepted leads, which in essence makes sure that there is basically a split between marketing and sales, because there is a handover, you need to have an SLA, et cetera. What I see happening a lot now, and US might be a little further in this than Europe at the moment, but there's also a big thing happening on sales automation. You know, we've had marketing automation within marketing, and now sales comes in with all kinds of sales technology. Is that a trend that you also see in the US, or is that something we just see here in Europe?
No, I mean, it's interesting now, because when you think about, like, the SDR, the sales development representative, or mm-hmm. BDR, the people that are typically, like, trying to create leads for sales, we're seeing more and more of those people now be inside of the marketing department. Yeah. One of our clients, large software company, have 1,000 employees. The VP of demand generation, all the BDRs report to him on the demand generation side, and he sits under the marketing realm. And I see a lot of change happening like that. So I definitely think that's important. I think one of the things, like, when I was at Kissmetrics, one of the things that I claim a lot of my success was, is that I was hired at the same exact time that there was a new CRO hired, a great guy, Chad Malkow. Great guy. But we both started within like a 2 month period of each other. And we both had to like reinvent our teams and reinvent stuff. And we started out with a very strong partnership. I think it was like our first week working together. We both went to the bar and hung out and like talked about like what we wanted to do. And we said that there should be no silo. And I sat in the sales department more often than I probably sat in the marketing department, because I was helping the sales reps, trying to understand what was going on. And then I would have Chad come to marketing meetings and Chad would chime in. So I do think, and we were extremely successful with that partnership. There was no silo between the two of us. We worked together. We were one, don't get me wrong, we were two teams, but at the same time, we tried to make sure that they worked together. I don't see that enough. And I think that's really unfortunate. I think if you've ever read the book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, it talks a lot about how the leadership team needs to be the first team and you need to prevent creating these giant silos. But I see companies who are blending the line of sales and marketing and trying to figure out how to make that more of one cohesive unit. They're seeing much, much more success. And you've probably seen this. Whenever you do have the true handoff from marketing to sales, and then you have the handoff from sales to like CS or product or anything like that, those are always really, really rough touch points. Customers hate being handed off. So at the end of the day, when there's a marketing to sales handoff and there's two silos in the company, it's just a recipe for disaster. The customer experience isn't going to be great. So however you can blend those two things together is always going to work really, really well. And we are seeing companies do their best to make that. But I don't see the change happening fast enough.
No, and I see the same thing happening within Europe. And we as said, we might be a little behind on the US, but you know, there's so many, especially B2B companies that work with SDRs and BDRs, etc. They have complete silos for marketing and sales. So I would, you know, a nice thing for 2021 would be to bring those two closer together. So Dan, thank you very much for all your insights on this podcast. We're probably going to have you back somewhere next year, because it's so fascinating to listen to all these technologies and see what happens. And, you know, there's new stuff coming out all the time. Thank you very much for being on the Marketing Technology Podcast.
Awesome. And thanks for having me so much. It's been great to chat with you. And I hope everybody enjoyed the show.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform or iTunes. Also, if you want to be a guest or know someone that should be a guest to our show, shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you for listening.